la 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 la. Oh, hello there. Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. For those of you who don't know, that was the theme song to Gene Shepherd's radio show in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And he used to sing along with it sometimes, but the thing is, he wasn't doing it by Skype. And when you're doing it by Skype, there's like a half-second lag. And half-second lag doesn't matter for conversations, but it does matter for singing along to music. So it doesn't work well. But sometimes I just can't help myself. Today is Monday. You know what that means? Monday means it is Mark Collette. Mark, are you with me yet? We will get him in momentarily. So we are going to have all sorts of things to talk about today. We do have his review of the Black Panther movie we're going to want to talk about. Mark, you there yet? He's standing by. I was just talking to him a second ago. I just want to note that on Friday of last week, for those of you who didn't hear it, following my regular show, which was actually taped, I substitute hosted for Michael Herzog's The American Awakening show, which follows this show. It was a great deal of fun. I had some new callers, and I don't know, maybe it was the time slot. Maybe that time slot has some good refreshing air. Maybe it's that desert air from the Valley of the Sun that somehow got imported into my lair here with Mr. T at the control boards. But it was good. I think we had a very good show, especially that first half hour. My brain seemed to be working better than usual. So you might want to go look at that on... you could go to the RBN archives. You could go to my YouTube channel, YouTube, and just look up Patrick Slattery. Mark, are you with me yet?
I'm here.
All right, great. Okay, yeah, I was just pitching my show from, not my show, but Michael Herzog's show from last week that I substituted for the Friday show. You heard that, right?
Yeah, it was excellent. You made some really, really good points. And I think you made them in a very moderate way, because sometimes, because we're so close to these issues, we sometimes get lost in minutiae or in quite in-depth points that for people who are new to the movement, people who are new to these issues, those points might be a little bit confusing or over their head or just out and out too complex. Mm. Whereas the points you were talking about during that piece, they were all very, very what I call noob-friendly. So for all the newbies who are listening in for the first time, they were points that they would understand, they would relate to, and they would be able to digest, which would obviously help them on their political journey to sort of more in-depth points, to more complex points. So I really enjoyed it, because I think, obviously, learning and, you know, more educational in-depth pieces are very, very important. But at the same time, it's our ability to reach a wider audience and spread our message to more people that is the most important thing we have to do. Mm-hmm. We must always never forget the issue that we are trying to reach and red pill as many people as possible. And because of that, we must always really tailor our message so that if it's heard by somebody who's listening for the first time, it won't alienate them, but it'll draw them in and resonate with them.
Right. And later in that show, I mean, one of the problems we do have is that discussion of Jewish issues, Jewish power, is so repressed that for all we know, the person that we are, that is listening, has absolutely no background. And later in the show, I had a caller... No, it was the show before. It was the day before. I was talking to your countryman, Andy Hitchcock, and he was bringing up what is often referred to as the Kalergi Plan. I don't know if you'd call it a plan so much as kind of a statement or a worldview spelled out by this Richard von Kudenhof Kalergi. He was an Austrian count who was half Japanese. And we talked about that some, And I got a little bit of feedback on my YouTube channel from people who were suggesting that I wasn't taking it quite seriously enough, and I did go back and look into it. And I take it a little more seriously now than I did before. So even somebody like myself who spends so much time looking into these issues, because so much information and so much discussion is repressed, that even somebody like myself, from not that I know, I don't want to come across as a know-it-all, but what I do find that I learn new things all the time. That's all I wanted to get at. I want to talk to you about your review of the Black Panther, because you've seen it. But before we get to it, I've heard something, and I want to ask you. I've heard something about a debate that would be happening late this week that would include yourself. And is this something that's been put together yet and that we can talk about?
Yeah, myself and Dr. David Duke, we're going in as a partnership. The two of us will be debating Halsey English on Worski Live this Thursday. Now, the time hasn't been set in stone, but it's roughly 7 p.m. Eastern time, roughly that time. And the debate is going to be on the Jewish question, immigration, and multiculturalism. Mm. And it'll be myself and David against Halsey English and a friend of his who, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I am just having to Google it now because I've forgotten his name. And that'll be on Worski Live on YouTube, which is at the moment. His name's Tom. The other guy's name is... this sounds really awful. Let's have a look. Tom Luongo. L-U-O-N-G-O. I hadn't actually heard of him before this, but I have now, because I'm debating him with David Duke.
Okay. Yeah, so a couple of details are still being worked out, like the exact time, but we're expecting it to be Thursday evening in American time, Thursday late afternoon or evening on the... What's it called? The Worski Live.
It's Worski a large Live. Channel on YouTube, and that it'll be one of the premier debates of that week on YouTube.
Well, that's something to look forward to. Okay, now you went and saw the Black Panther movie, which still the media here is talking about it. Rave reviews. Of course, it had rave reviews before it was released. That was a little bit odd, but why don't you tell us your impressions of this movie?
Well, I've done a full review on my channel, and that's, I think it's about a 17-minute review. So if you want to check that out, please do, because it'll be a lot more in-depth than what I'm going to say here and now, because obviously for time constraints, you don't want me just going to a 17-minute monologue, but that'd be quite bizarre.
It's a pretty good monologue. I've heard it.
It's a pretty good monologue. I'll just read my review out then, Patrick. That'll kill 17 minutes. Now, well, the thing with the film is, firstly, I've got to say, it is full of fantastical nonsense. It's also full of silly anti-white narratives. It's all about African superiority. There's lots of pops taken at white culture. There's attacks at sort of white people from the point of view of slavery, colonialism, creating white guilt, that whites were backward, that whites let the world slip into chaos and Wakanda, this technologically advanced superior state that Africans built, had to hide itself away from the West because we just can't be trusted with anything. There's all that nonsense. But what people might actually want to know is it a good film? And the answer is no, it's not. But it's not a bad film either. When you strip back the anti-white narratives, it's a very mediocre film. It's a little bit silly. I mean, one of the things that made me laugh is there's a car chase, which I found quite boring. I do like action films. The last really good action film I saw was one with Keanu Reeves called John Wick. That was excellent. It's where he's essentially a retired hitman, and some people rub him up the wrong way and do something to him that they really shouldn't, and they realize they've picked on the wrong guy. Very good film. Very fast-paced. Bit of a roller coaster ride. Enjoyed it very much. But this didn't really seem to have that. It was a bit stop-start. It was bloated in places. The actual action and the car chases and things like that, you never really felt there was anything at stake. Now, I know that might seem odd, and you're thinking, what do you mean? Well, you never really felt anything bad was going to happen. You never really felt that anyone that mattered was going to die or anything was really up for grabs. And because of that, I found it quite boring. It was, you know, obviously quite CGI heavy. And as I said, it was decent, but nothing more. And in this car chase, it was just one of the silly anti-white moments in the film. There's this shaven-headed black woman, and despite them being the most technologically advanced nation in the whole world and being gifted with this substance, vibranium, which is, according to the film, the strongest substance in the whole universe, despite all of that, they still use spears. They haven't developed an advanced assault rifle. They've not developed tanks or artillery or sidearms or anything like the West did. They're using these spears. And at one point, the bad guys are firing at their car with assault rifles. And this shaven-headed black woman, she remarks, "Guns, so primitive." As if we're the primitive, silly ones. As if we're the ones that sort of haven't got our technology together yet. And the funny thing about that is, if you look at an actual film based in Africa that's built around a real historical occurrence, Zulu is the film I'm talking about, that showed just how unprimitive the rifle was, because 150 British servicemen, who were some of them wounded and sick, managed to fend off 4,000 Zulu warriors, and they did so with breech-loading rifles, not fully automatic assault rifles, but breech-loading rifles. On that day, the rifle was far more powerful than the spear. But in the Marvel universe, the blacks look down their noses at the primitive Europeans for only having their assault rifles. And this follows throughout the whole film. It's very silly. The mix of technology and African culture's nonsensical. Like, if I said to a 12-year-old boy who had like mild learning difficulties, "Can you come up with a theme in the next 10 minutes that mixes technology and Africa?" And he'd probably say, "Well, how about we have a spaceship that flies to a big city and that's being flown by black people who wear loincloths and face paint?" And you'd be like, "Well, it's a good try, but it's a very immature way at approaching this subject." But that's exactly what the Black Panther is, with a bit of the Lion King thrown in. They literally rip off the Lion King. Like, they obviously, when they came up with this sort of rather mildly retarded theme, they then watched the Lion King, and that was it. They'd got everything they needed. And that's really what the film is. And there's a bit at the end that sort of sums this up. There's meant to be this epic battle in Africa, in this advanced state that's got drop ships, but people are wearing loincloths. You know, instead of having an election, they have a fist fight on top of a waterfall to decide who the leader of the nation's going to be. And, you know, they're not wearing advanced clothing. They've still got discs through their bottom lips, and they're wearing loincloths. And when a white man tries to speak to them, they bark at him like dogs. It's all very bizarre. But in this last climactic battle, it's not tanks. It's African men in tribal dress riding armored rhinos. And again, you're just thinking, how long did it take them to come up with that? And literally, was it a team of overexcited 12-year-old boys with ADHD? Because it seems that way. But again, wasn't totally horrible. It was watchable, just very mediocre. And the only reason it's got these rave reviews is because it pushed themes of black superiority. It mocked whites. It belittled whites. It pushed anti-white narratives. And some parts of it, like the bit where the white man tries to speak and all the blacks bark at him, just wouldn't have been tolerated if it had been the other way around.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if a black man tried to speak and whites barked at them, people would say, "Look how stupid the whites are," right?
I would say definitely so. And I mean, there was another interesting thing in it. And this is a thing where Hollywood can't really make up its mind. The Black Panther, he wants an isolationist ethno-state, and his enemy, Eric Killmonger, he doesn't. The Black Panther...
And is Eric Killmonger white or black?
He's black as well. He was actually quite an interesting character. He was played by a guy called Michael B. Jordan. And the only two good performances in the film were the bad guys. And Michael B. Jordan actually put on a good performance as Eric Killmonger. But Eric Killmonger, he wants to use Wakanda's power to wage a war on the evil white world, on the colonizers, on the slave traders. And he wants to fight a war, in his words, for all the oppressed people of the world. But the funny thing is, when I was watching this film, I was thinking to myself, who would the left, who would Black Lives Matter, who would all these liberal groups actually side with? The isolationist Black Panther, who wants a walled ethno state with no immigration and no contact with the outside world, no multiculturalism, he wants his culture, his traditions to be first and foremost. Or would they actually have sided with Eric Killmonger, the bad guy, the man who wants to take the war to the white man, the yeah. man who wants to lead a war against America, Britain, France, for all these perceived crimes of 100 years ago? What do you think?
That sounds like Killmonger, is that what they were calling him?
He's called Eric Killmonger, and he's covered in those African tribal scars. He's got okay. one scar for every person he's killed.
Okay. not totally nonviolent. So he sounds kind of like what's the name of the country?
Wakanda.
Is he the Wakandan Trotsky?
He's
Trotsky was all about you can't have socialism in one country. You have to have the world revolution.
I would say he was more of a sort of an African vengeance against perceived slights of the past. Because remember, in these films, they completely misrepresent slavery and colonialism. They, at one point in the film, Killmonger goes into a museum to steal an African artifact made of vibranium. And when he's in the museum, he says to the museum curator, "I'm going to take this off your hands." And she says, "I don't think so. You can't just take things from the museum." And he replies, "Well, how do you think your ancestors got it? They took it like they took everything else." And the narrative here is that constantly throughout the film, that white people went to Africa, white people took everything they wanted, and that Africa was essentially some, you know, almost utopia. Before we turned up, it was this happy place where everyone got on. There was no wars, there was no conflicts. And obviously the truth of the matter is, when we arrived in Africa, it was a place where slavery, warfare, intertribal conflict was the norm. You know, we didn't capture slaves. We didn't go around capturing slaves or rounding them up. We purchased them off tribal leaders.
Right. Well, we're about to go to the break, but I want to continue this conversation about both the real history and the imagined history of Marvel Comics when we come back from the break. Okay. All right.
There's an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back. So we're starting to talk about African history, but I want to finish up a bit with the movie before we go to the history that it actually distorts and misrepresents. As for this movie, this is a genre of films that one of my friends who has been on my podcast sometimes, Richard Sloan, he's a professor of film writing and whatnot. He describes this genre of movies like Django, like this, as justification for retribution against whites. That's its purpose. Now, I was talking to somebody who saw the movie. They had a pretty similar view of it as you, and were pointing out kind of the lack of logic or lack of a coherent decision-making process or thinking-making process amongst some of the main characters. But a couple points I want to point out, and then maybe you, because I haven't seen the movie, maybe you can tell me. I mean, for one thing, I've said it before that it's almost pathetic that this one advanced technological society that Africans produced was produced in the figment as a figment of the imagination of a Jewish comic book writer. But even then, this Jewish comic book writer, is it that these black Africans in the middle of nowhere were able to, just based on their own cunning and wit, were able to build up advanced technology? No, they had vibranium, fell from the sky, fell right into their laps, and only they had it. And this is what it was based on. So it wasn't based on their own ingenuity. It was based on having some marvelous substance that nobody else had. And that's kind of pathetic, too. And then the question I have, and I guess, were they addressing this in the film? They had all this technology, and yet what did they do to protect their brethren? If two of the three pillars of white guilt are slavery and colonialism, why did they do nothing to protect their brethren from slavery and colonialism? Unless maybe slavery and colonialism weren't as bad as they thought. I don't know. How is this addressed?
Well, firstly, and one of the most interesting things about the Black Panther is the idea that this vibranium fell from the sky. There's this giant meteorite made of this fantastical stuff, the strongest stuff in the universe, no less. And the vibranium, it falls down and it infects the soil, it infects the plants, and they mine it. They mine it and they use it. But the interesting thing is that in itself kind of underlies one of the greatest sort of lies about Africa. When people talk about Africa, they often talk about the African nation as, or the African continent, sorry, as a place where, you know, these people had everything taken from them. And, you know, they needed this vibranium. This vibranium gave them the leg up. But the bizarre thing is, when you actually look at the mineral reserves in Africa, they rank first or second in terms of the mineral wealth for things such as plutonium, gold, platinum-grade minerals, bauxite,
uranium,
cobalt. Uranium, sorry. And I knew it was something nuclear.
But plutonium's a waste product of uranium.
Sorry, it is, yes, indeed. Sorry, I was, yes, I stand corrected. But yes, it's got all of these great mineral deposits already. But the fact of the matter is, Africans did nothing with them. Africans walked around with diamonds under their feet, gold under their feet, uranium, cobalt, bauxite, all there, but did nothing with them. They were sitting on a literal gold mine, but never minded. And I find it really interesting, the idea that Marvel Comics needs to give these people vibranium as a way of being this great equalizer, this substance that raises them up above all others, when in fact, even in the real world, they were sat on a mineral reserve that, if they had utilized it, would have placed them naturally above all others.
You know, the Bantu people in Central Africa acquired iron technology, and iron technology is actually advanced. And I believe that they leapfrogged over bronze technology that had not been developed in Africa. But because of their proximity to Egypt and to the Middle East, that iron technology found its way to Africa. They didn't invent it, but they acquired it. They never developed it much, but they exploited what they had acquired, and armed with this iron technology, the Bantu expanded and took over much of the continent, and more or less genocided the Pygmies, genocided the Bushmen along the way. But never did a whole lot with it. They leapfrogged. In more recent years, leapfrogged over wired telephone, landline technology, which they were never able to establish much in the way of a telephone network. So, okay, we'll be back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. So we were talking about the Black Panther, and of course the Black Panther movie, it's part of this genre to justify retribution against white people. And Mark, you've talked about the three pillars of white guilt, one of them being the Holocaust and the other two being slavery and colonialism. And colonialism we don't hear about as much in the United States because it really wasn't that much of a colonial power. But regarding Africa, I mean, the thing about, well, first of all, I mean, we could talk about slavery because you did a recent video on slavery. And, you know, the question is, okay, we all, it's easy to agree that slavery is wrong. But if you look at human history, slavery was all over the place. Lots of wrong things were all over the place. I mean, the history of humanity is not all glory. There's a lot of suffering, a lot of injustice, and you know, you could look at it. Did the slaves in North America? I mean, 400,000 or so were brought here, and there's 40 million here now. If there had been no slavery, there'd be no Black American race. You would think that Blacks wouldn't want to go back and rewrite history in that way and write themselves out of history. There's that. Was the life of a Black American slave so much worse or any worse than the lives of Russian serfs or peasants in China, or, you know, the conditions of most people around the world at that time? Maybe we can talk about this first and then go into colonialism a little bit later.
Well, it's very interesting points, and I'm going to start with some statistics. And firstly, I'll say that despite Americans being talked about in the slave trade, everyone always loves to talk about the Americans. Well, at the height of the slave trade, I wrote in my book that only 1.6% of Americans, of free Americans, owned slaves. And that's actually an overestimate. I was actually wrong in my book. I overestimated it. And I went through all the figures from the 1860 census, and I worked out that essentially, it's 1.44% of free Americans that own slaves. Just 1.44%. Mm-hmm. So a tiny minority. Secondly, you talk about the slaves that went to America, that were taken to America. Well, that's a very interesting point as well, because that was only amounted for 5% of those who were taken across the Atlantic. The rest ended up in the West Indies, Jamaica, Haiti, or South America. So only 5% ended up in America, and only 1.44% of free Americans owned slaves. So really, once you start looking at this in context, you've got to say to yourself, well, this is really being overblown. What's more, the people who were taken to America were usually, and again, look at this in context, were actually treated better by American slave owners than they would have been by African or Arab slave owners. Now, around 90% of slaves who were taken to America survived, and they were mainly taken for agricultural purposes. They were allowed to marry, they were allowed to have relationships, they were allowed to have children, they were allowed to obviously breed, you know. But those taken by the Arabs and across the entire transatlantic slave trade, the entire transatlantic, not just the ones that went to America, but the ones that went just across the Atlantic, about 12.5 million Africans were taken. Well, far more Africans were taken to Arab states, somewhere between 14 and 28 million, which is a lot more, and they were treated far, far worse. And when I say far, far worse, they were taken mainly for military or sexual purposes, and in some of the slave routes, it was almost a reversal of the mortality rates, with 80% dying on some of the desert treks. And the reason you have Africans or those of African descent in America today is because they were allowed to have families. They were allowed to breed. Now, that was not the case in the Arab slave trade. Males were castrated, which is extreme, and it was done in it's a brutal thing in itself, but it was done in a particularly brutal way. And not only were they castrated, but any women who were taken there for sexual purposes had their children beaten to death when they gave birth if they fell pregnant.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and of course, slavery was endemic throughout history, and even the period of time we're talking about, say the United States after independence or before independence, one of the first military confrontations the United States got into was with the with Tripoli, the Barbary Coast, and that was in large part over these pirates doing, well, they were raiding American trading ships, but they had also been going on slave raids and taking Europeans.
Yes,
but it was everywhere. It was everywhere in Africa. Now I'm currently reading this book. It's a big book. The Scramble for Africa, it's by Thomas Pakenham, The White Man's Conquest of the Dark Continent from 1876 to 1912. This is very, very recent. And it's interesting. You could also, though, if you wanted a more contemporary account, you could look at, there was a book called Negroes in Negroland, and you can either find it in print, or you can hear it as a YouTube video. It's out there. It's huge. And that's an account that was taken from Livingston or Stanley or Arab slave traders, people who are actually in Africa. And it paints a picture of a place where life is cheap, where there's incredible brutality and violence. Slavery is everywhere. Cannibalism is everywhere. It was not a pretty picture. And then as for the book I'm reading, you know, it starts off with Dr. Livingston, and who had gone to Africa, and Stanley, and Livingston's British, and Stanley was an American journalist who was trying to catch up with him, and they're crisscrossing Central Africa in the 1870s, and being the first Europeans ever to be in these places, and this is after slavery had ended in America. So the idea of whites going into the interior of Africa and taking these people is completely far-fetched. Whites reached the coast, but to the extent these people were rounded up, they were rounded up by fellow Africans or sometimes Arabs. It wasn't whites who were enslaving Africans. Whites were purchasing slaves from slave traders who were purchasing them from African kings, and this, you know, to the extent they were kings, what were they kings of? They were kings of tribes or of kingdoms whose economies were based largely on slavery. Isn't that what, have you found the same thing?
No, I found exactly the same thing. And firstly, it is an important thing to note that we as a people, we as a race, are the exception to the whole of recorded humanity, in that we do not practice slavery. In fact, we as a race turned our back on slavery. Slavery today is still commonplace in Africa, in the Middle East, and in the developing world. And when you look at that, and you look at the fact the only place where slavery is completely eradicated is here in the West, that really puts things into context, because we didn't start slavery. Slavery was a global phenomenon. In fact, slavery existed before recorded time. But slavery was something that Europeans opposed. It was something our forefathers made a commitment to stop. And we didn't just give it up ourselves, but we spent huge, huge amounts of money, time, effort, troops, resources on combating the global slave trade. That was something we did. It was something we found important. And often, in many cases, especially British troops died fighting for the liberty of slaves. For example, we went and we tried to strike a deal with the King of Dahomey, and we said, "Look, no more slavery." But he defied us. He carried on. He carried on trading.
Dahomey
in slaves.
Being a kingdom on the Atlantic coast in Western Africa.
Yes, he carried on. He carried on. If you look at modern-day Ghana, well, that was originally the Ashanti tribe, and much of their wealth was built on conquering other African tribes, other African nations, and selling them to Arabs, Europeans, or Jews. Now, on top of that, you've got the situation in Khartoum, where there was a large Islamic rebellion in Khartoum, which was largely over the fact that Britain did not want any more slavery. They wanted to stop the slave trade in South Sudan, and Arabs didn't want that. Arabs rebelled against British rule, not because British rule was in fact tyrannous, but because British rule opposed tyranny. British rule opposed slavery, and slavery for them was highly profitable. And when you look at these facts, and these are the facts, you can actually see that we are painted as the bad guys by those who have an anti-Western agenda. But in fact, we really are historically the good guys. We're the ones who stopped slavery. And slavery is alive and well today. It's alive and well in Libya. It's alive and well elsewhere in Africa. You know, it's alive and well in the Middle East. But it's not alive and well here in Britain or America. It doesn't exist. And when you take all that into account, you can see that we are getting the blame for something that we have basically tried to stop. We are the exception. We're the good guys here.
Yeah, it is a great irony. Now, it's not to say that Europeans did not engage in slavery as the Mongols, the Turks, the Arabs, the Bantus, the Aztecs, everybody around the world had engaged in it. But when the Europeans were really at the peak of their power in the world, they went about eradicating slavery. And it wasn't as if there wasn't disagreement and conflict within Western societies, but it was anti-slavery people in the West who took control of their own societies and then tried to enforce this notion of eradicating slavery on the rest of the world with a great deal of success. And yet this European morality is now being used to attack the very Europeans who produced that morality. Isn't that a great irony that the Europeans are being attacked for slavery when the Europeans, in fact, ended slavery? And to somebody listening to this, it seems like, what kind of rank and far-fetched excuse-making is that? That's how it sounded to my ears at first. What kind of excuse-making is that? But it's not excuse-making. Slavery existed everywhere. European morality ended slavery almost everywhere. Everywhere that they could impose themselves on, they ended slavery. And now we are being attacked, and white guilt is being fertilized with this notion of slavery.
No, of course. And this is the problem, because kids are being brought up, children are being brought up, they're being educated in an anti-Western environment where they are actually being taught that their forefathers were the bad guys, that their forefathers were evil. And that's bad anyway, because essentially you don't want people to hate their own forefathers. You don't want people to hate their own culture, their own ancestors, their own civilization. But to make people hate their own ancestors, their own culture, their own civilization, when in fact their ancestors were the good ones, the noble ones, the ones that put their own necks on the line to combat these negative practices, well, that makes things even worse. And that just shows the devious nature of our enemies. Our enemies will do anything they can to attack us, and they are not just misrepresenting history, but they are completely rewriting history. So history now is anti-Western. It pushes an anti-Western agenda. And you have these kids. I mean, I've got them on my Twitter. I remember after making my video on the Holocaust, I posted it up, and I had some, sprout-faced kid telling me that if whites aren't ashamed of their history, if whites aren't sad, if they're not guilty, if they don't feel that way, then they're bad. For a white not to feel ashamed of everything, that would be terrible, because then he wouldn't truly understand history. Whereas, in fact, it's the other way around. And this was a microcosm of the problem. This was an example of just how brainwashed these youngsters are. This youngster was proud of the fact that he didn't like his ancestors. He was proud of the fact he felt shame and guilt and sorrow for things that never happened or things that were presented out of their correct historical context. And that's what we're fighting against. We're fighting against people that have been brainwashed by a system that is extremely powerful and all-pervasive.
Okay, I want to move on to colonialism. And it's something that is probably used a lot more to beat guilt into white brains in Britain and Europe than in the United States. Now, the United States has a history of being actually a settler colony. The North America, the indigenous population, was hunter-gatherer, and so they were sparse, because hunter-gatherers are sparsely populated. And then plus you had the factor of the diseases, which they had less resistance to. And, of course, diseases aren't racist. And, of course, Europe has been decimated by disease introduced from elsewhere as well. You think of the bubonic plague, which I guess came through the Silk Road into Europe, and Europeans had no resistance to it, a smallpox. We've had epidemic diseases wipe out our people, too. But the combination of the two meant it was a virtually empty continent, and it was the easiest thing for the European settlers to expand from the Atlantic to the Pacific. And we don't think too much about colonialism here, because all these areas got incorporated into the American state. But in Europe and Britain, you had areas that were under your control, India, for instance, that then wound up becoming independent. And so there, what is it like being British, going to a British school? How is colonialism used to invoke white guilt?
Well, again, it's presented in a very disingenuous narrative, in a way that's not historically accurate. We were naturally pioneers. We were people that went to...
You know, I think we might be going to break into... No. I think we are going to break.
Resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue, and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed, and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks.
Welcome back to the show. So just before the break, Mark, I asked you a question about colonialism and how that's used in Britain to promote white guilt.
Yes. Well, again, much in the same way as slavery is, it's just presented in a historically inaccurate context. And that's the big problem we've got. It is historically inaccurate. Inaccurate. What they try to present white people as some sort of ghoulish group of thieves who went soullessly and mercilessly around the world stealing from others, when that's not the case. Everywhere where we went, We gave far more than we took. Many of these African nations hadn't even invented the wheel. And we not only gave them the wheel, but we showed them how to cultivate crops. We showed them how to farm. We showed them how to dig for water, rather than having to walk, you know, 3 miles to the nearest clean water source. We showed them how to build their own wells. We gave them written language. We gave them healthcare. We gave them sanitation. We gave them 2-story buildings. Now, all of these things weren't done out of any form of cruelty, but they were done out of kindness. Now, sure, we took diamonds. We took gold. We took other mineral wealth. And the fact is, they weren't being used. We didn't steal those things. Sure, we took them, but we didn't steal them. It wasn't like we went to Africa and there was a thriving civilization full of diamond mines and gold mines and farming and fishing and forestry. And we went there and we took over those industries by force. We went to places that were completely undeveloped, that were just filled with tribes, with people who hadn't invented the wheel, who hadn't even invented 2-story buildings. And we gave them the best of our knowledge, and we took things they didn't even know were there. Now, that doesn't necessarily make taking those things right, but again, it places it into an important context. And if you strip away that context, it was done so that, you know, these people, our enemies, strip away that context to make us look worse, to make us look evil, to make our children hate us, to present these arguments in a way that are so disingenuous, that are so utterly twisted, that, like I explained earlier, these youngsters end up hating their own ancestors and feeling this huge disconnect between themselves and the people they should have reverence for.
Mm-hmm. And you can look at, well, it's ironic that you have leftists who would decry colonialism as they do, when Karl Marx, as a writer for the New York Herald or the New York Tribune, was very pro-colonialism. He was very much in favor of British colonialism around the world because it was bringing these societies into an industrial era, into an era which would then poise them for the next era, the communist era. But he was in favor of all of this. And if you look at so many countries that were colonized in various areas, you look at Southeast Asia, you know, you can look at Hong Kong, the city that the British founded, Singapore, look at Malaysia. And these are really advanced, thriving areas now. And it wouldn't, they are a result of colonialism as much as anything else. Well, this hour goes so fast. I'll certainly look forward to having you back next week, and we'll look forward to your debate with Dr. Duke and the other guys on Thursday evening.
The other guys.
The other guys. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I don't have their names memorized. Okay, and we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.